Hello, everyone. Sendell Podcast number 45. 45 episodes since May 28th. That's how much content the Sandbox DAO has been generating for the SandFam community. And today, we're continuing our mini-series on the lessons from other DAOs. We've heard from ApeCoin DAO, we've heard from City DAO, and now we are going to hear from Bankless DAO, now called Black Flag DAO, and the lessons and the different things that we can learn from them. I have Rowan, TrueCat, and ZeeFi here. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, thanks.
So the scope of the talk today is it is a meet and greet with our illustrious guests and a learning opportunity. Things that went well, things that didn't go well, things to watch out for, things that we can incorporate ourselves into our own ecosystem. Disclaimer is that nothing said today is financial legal advice. Nothing we say is to be taken as that. And I do not represent the Sandbox Game or the Sandbox DAO Foundation. Rowan, TrueCat, ZeeFi, please tell me, do you represent the Black Flag DAO now? Is that the way to say that?
Yeah,
we're official people. Yeah, right. We're not official spokespeople, I guess you would say.
Yeah. Okay, so there are community members of the...
Yeah.
Got it. Right. All right, everyone's head nodding. Okay. when I won't say the word SIP too much, but we will say the word DAO, which means decentralized autonomous organization. When I say the word SandFam, I'm talking about the Sandbox community who participate in the people, products, and purpose of the Sandbox ecosystem. Do you all over in Black Flag DAO, do you have a different way you call family? Like we say Sandbox family, SandFam?
Not yet.
Okay, working on it. All right.
For a while there, we were BDAO fam.
Yeah. What was that, TrueCat?
For a while there, we were BDAO fam.
BDAO.
We used to shorten Bankless DAO to BDAO. DAO yet.
That's a nice ring to it. Scoreboard and checkbook have not moved yet because we just implemented the delegation system, and the DAO admin team has been working on that. And we'll return back to SIP's improvement proposals here in the next week. We have three guests today. As I mentioned, ZeeFi, Rowan, and TrueCat all are a part of what's called the Transition Council, transitioning the Bankless DAO to the Black Flag DAO. And let's get into some introductions. ZeeFi, let's start with you. Please give us a little bit about who you are.
Sure. excuse me. I joined Bankless DAO back in November of 21. So it's been 3 years now as we're coming up on this transition here to Black Flag. I started the organization. Gosh, it was an attempt at is this the next thing? Is this the future of work? And that's what drew me to the DAO space in general. And how I approached it was like a two-pronged kind of approach. I tried to bring skills that I had already to the DAO. And that's when I jumped into the education department and operations. And then I tried to find new information on skills that I didn't know. And that's where I dipped into Audiovisual Guild. So it was just kind of a immersion, and I've been in every corner of the DAO since then, and looking forward to the reboot here into Black Flag DAO.
Thank you, ZeeFi. Rowan.
Yeah, so I've been around pretty much as long as ZeeFi. Was an original member of the DAO when it was first created by the Bankless LLC folks, Ryan and David. I wasn't as involved initially, just because life, prevented me from getting involved. But I was lurking for a few months, and then early in 2022,
you gotta
learn. And I would say, on that note, anyone interested in DAOs, there's a fairly steep learning curve. It's kind of a novel way to organize people, self-organize communities. It was an interesting experience for sure. And what drew me there was, I was a longtime listener of the Bankless podcast that Ryan and David host. And I was really attracted to sort of the ethos that they espoused of decentralization and, it's in the name, Bankless, go Bankless. you know, we have the technology available to us to empower individuals over institutions, especially in the financial realm now. So, you know, power, money is power. And I was interested in contributing to whatever that meant. So it was exciting. And yeah, my contributions to the iteration known as Bankless DAO were largely in ops. And now with the Transition Council. And, you know, I think the three of us were pretty much always involved in governance to some extent. I mean, I won't speak for ZFi or True, but those, you know, those types of contributions aren't necessarily roles in a lot of DAOs. So yeah, I think ops reflects the sort of role-based contributions that I've made, and now with the Transition Council.
Gotcha. And so you said you're in the coordination and ops department. Is that it?
Yeah, it was. Operations department. Yeah.
And now Transition Council.
Yeah, the operations department doesn't exist anymore. It may in the future, or
RIP another ops version department.
Yeah.
And ZFi, did you say you were in the AV department and also what other one?
I started out in education and AV. And then kind of expanded into ops and some governance stuff and pretty much anything else. Yeah. I just was hungry. Tried to learn everything.
Went from a skill set you knew in education to a skill set you wanted to learn in AV.
Correct.
Got it. And True. True Cat. Awesome name, by the way.
Thank you. I joined in at the end of August in 2021. I probably would have lurked for a lot longer. But I actually, the people who know me know that I tend to spot mistakes quite easily. And so I actually spotted something that I felt I needed to speak up about. It was, they're holding like a design logo competition for Academy, and they put one of the wrong finalists through to the final vote. And I was like, oh, and I had actually entered
not on my watch,
which didn't get through, and that was fine. But I spoke up because I was like, oh, hold on, I think you've miscounted. So that is what sort of launched me into the DAO. And I was part of Design Guild through that, AV Guild. I held some roles there. I was also in Research Guild. I was a strong part of Writers Guild. I contributed to Ox.
A fellow writer. All right.
And speaking of skill sets, you kind of realize you had, like, I've had a reputation since I joined the DAO of being a good editor. I don't have any editing training or anything like that, but I just spot detail. So I've contributed across a range of places in the DAO, and yeah, it's become a second home.
And when did you get involved in crypto?
Around that same time. I hadn't been exposed to it. I had a very short run in the couple of months prior to joining the DAO. I was kind of listening to some podcasts and seeing things that I was interested in. I always thought that with the first time I heard about a DAO, I thought it was really a bunch of just very anonymous people not interacting with each other and just voting on smart contract proposals. And so it was astounding to me how human Bankless DAO actually was when I got there. And I love that.
I want to write that down. It was astounding how human the DAO was.
Very human interactions.
That's a good way to phrase that.
And I think that persists. Like, I think that's something that persists
very much
today. You know, it's a really interesting community. I can't say that I'm not comparing and contrasting because I haven't been involved in a lot of DAOs, but there are great vibes, great people.
Yeah. I traveled to Denver earlier this year to meet a whole bunch of people from Bankless DAO, Black Flag DAO now. And I didn't know that I would get to meet them ever, but the opportunity came, and I was able to attend East Denver. And, you know, the hugs that you, and we've talked about this a lot, even just people living in America and meeting each other for the first time, but for me to travel from Australia and meet all of these people who I've, you know, been in calls with for so long, it was instant hugs, instant comfort with each other. Cool. Really great. Lifelong friends.
That's cool. I like that. That's pretty special. Yeah. It's like, and if you've been a gamer for a long time, you might have felt the same camaraderie, that instant connection where like, hey.
Yep.
Totally. Yeah. Well, I myself have only known about DAO since May 28th of this year. I didn't even know what a DAO was until the sandbox DAO said, surprise, here we are. And it's been on a journey ever since then. We are learning a lot as fast as we can.
Thank you.
So let's get the first one. So Bankless DAO, which short for when we say BDAO, if we ever say that, that means Bankless DAO. And then Black Flag DAO, I'm just going to say BF DAO. So from the timeline that I've been able to piece together, in May of 2021, that's when it was founded by David and Ryan with 35,000, and I'm quoting just from what I pulled from websites and everything else, founded it with a 35,000 airdrop to Bankless subs as a separate entity from the Bankless LLC. That's important for what comes later. So November 2023, Bankless DAO submits a proposal in Arbitrum DAO. November 2023, also, Bankless LLC podcast occurs with David and Ryan. Then September in 2024, there's the Bankless podcast episode, which is what originally I listened to first with ZFi and Rowan articulating what happened on their side. And then sometime in 2024, starts the reorg timeline, of which, as a fellow PM, I am super, so impressed. Whoever put this thing together, this reorg timeline, was a pro. So it looks like everything starts about May-ish, is when all this temperature checks start. And just phenomenal. If it's a team effort, y'all are doing phenomenal when it comes to articulating what steps you have to take. And it's awesome. And then, and sometime in the future, ZFi's is a transition to Black Flag.
Looking very modest.
What was that true?
ZFi is sitting over there looking very modest.
ZFi? I have you to thank for the presentation of it and the maintenance. Like I said, man, as a fellow program manager, I think that it was so clear to me where to work in questions and research. And now transitioning sometime in the future to blackflagcollective.org. Did I miss anything in terms of context? I'm sure there's a ton of stuff I missed, but.
Yeah, I do want to make a small correction because Black Flag Collective is actually not Black Flag DAO.
Really? Okay, let me just delete that right off the slide.
Well, you don't need to delete it, I don't think. It's part of the DAO, but it's not the DAO. So go ahead, Drew. Okay. I think you were going to elaborate.
Yeah. So one of our community members is by his own admission sometimes impatient, and he's been very keen to champion the Black Flag brand. And so, and he has really wanted to get going on some IRL events. And so started the Black Flag Collective a little while ago. And that website, blackflagcollective.org, is actually what he has set up in order to, he's got a pool together going where people can contribute, and then they vote on the proceeds of the pool together going towards IRL events. And so that's what Black Flag Collective is doing. And that's kind of been happening in parallel to our transition process in the DAO.
Got it. And so we're
Black Flag DAO, and we will have a website soon on that domain.
Got it. So, okay, no website yet. So I didn't miss anything important then. That's all right. So you're organizing through Discord and through, I think you still have the podcast. Didn't I just see a new episode come out not long ago? And
the Making Bank podcast?
Or maybe. No, I'm getting all twisted up in my brain.
Was ZFi and I?
Yes. Yes, that's the one.
That's Making Bank, and that is hosted by a fella named Drost. So, I mean, I guess for context, there in the iteration of Bankless DAO, there were we focused on sort of like a permissionless approach to projects or initiatives. There were permissions around securing funding, but you could pretty much do whatever you wanted to do under the name of the DAO, which was both great and not so great, as we'll get into, and what ultimately precipitated some of where we ended up now. But all to say, Drost created Making Bank back when Bankless DAO was a thing, and he has carried it on since. So it is one podcast associated with and started sort of within Bankless DAO, but there are others, just okay. as there are other sort of, newsletters and general sort of media output.
Got it. Okay. So in about when ZFi or anyone else, about when do you expect the transition to BF DAO to conclude?
We're hoping as soon as possible. I think we
soon as possible. Okay.
Put like the end of the year as our guideline, as our goalpost, but we've had some delays along the way, so it may extend into 2025.
Okay, got it. All right, let's get right into the.
I sent you our new logo in our discourse chat. Okay. In case you'd like to share it,
I would love to. It's an easy thing to.
Thanks for doing that, Drew.
All right.
He's laughing at it.
Very good. Okay. Black Flag DAO logo. And here we go. We'll just resize this a little bit. Let's get into that first question. The purpose of BDAO versus Black Flag DAO or BF DAO. So BDAO, what I found, I just copy pasted from either a news article or a website. Was it? Oh, it was the Google page that I found in Notion. That BDAO, its mission was media and social DAO onboarding 1 billion people to crypto, or that was the goal. Is that, is there any, start just comments all around close? Did I get close?
I think that's pretty accurate for the old one.
Yep, for the old one, for sure. And I mean, I would qualify anything that we say in the sense that we may have been around when that was established, but I don't know to what extent we were a part of that decision. I feel like a lot of the sort of mission, vision, and values were largely defined by people closer to Bankless LLC. I mean, it was sort of the brainchild of that group. And
got it.
You know, people obviously were very interested, like myself and like the three of us here.
Gotcha.
But yeah, that was, and I feel like that is sort of, that's a spinoff of maybe what Ryan and David were, similar to what Ryan and David were trying to achieve through their podcast. But yeah, that's more
that,
or less.
That permissionless approach that you were commenting on earlier?
In what sense?
When you said that there was a permissionless approach to, I think you were attributing that to BDAO, or is it now Black BF DAO?
BDAO. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the idea was that there would be lots of media nodes. And in the original Genesis proposal, Bankless LLC talked about being a media node of the DAO with their podcast. And so the idea was that under a headless brand, people would be able to produce media in all forms and education to further the Bankless mission.
Yeah.
And it used to often get shorthanded to onboarding the next billion people to crypto, which is, you know, something that a lot of people use. That was, you know, the one that you read is actually the one that was always established as the mission and vision. But certainly what attracted to me to the DAO was that education and media angle, because I was, you know, in the very short time I'd been exposed to this world, I was worried that if I wasn't technical, I didn't necessarily have a home. So,
yeah,
I definitely can sympathize with that perspective for sure.
And so there was a lot of effort in BDAO at that time to provide information to people who are new, you know, sort of the normies of who are dipping their toes into crypto and, you know, maybe don't even know the phrase, not your keys, not your crypto. Help people understand, you know, what this whole space is about and maybe what they can gain from it and definitely what they can learn. So, you know, ZFi spent a lot of time in the education department. Maybe he can speak to some more of their efforts, but, you know, obviously there was a lot of outreach in terms of media, the various media nodes, podcasts, newsletters, and so on. And then there were also, you know, educational components, whether it was, you know, the Project Bankless Academy, which is still going, as far as I know.
I thought that was awesome too when I saw that. Bankless Academy.
The Academy is great.
Yep. Yeah.
Very intuitive product. Really cool.
Yeah.
So what would you say the purpose is now that you can articulate for BFDAO that's been agreed upon or in the works?
It's less of an onboarding focus this time. It's more of vibing and thriving within these decentralized systems. If you're into this space, if these are things that connect with you, we want you to come and explore tools with us. It's a little bit less directed and more of a vague, welcoming purpose.
I can read you the one that we decided on if you like. I just grabbed it. It's to build an on-chain community of change makers focused on vibing, thriving, and exploring decentralized systems.
Thank you.
Vibing, thriving, and what was the last part?
Exploring.
Exploring. To build an on-chain community of change makers focused on vibing, thriving, and exploring
decentralized systems. But Rowan, you're going to speak then. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's perfect. I think it's important that we just had it verbatim for clarity. But what I was going to say is, you know, I think we realized that we don't need to sort of recreate the educational components that already exist. You know, there are on-ramps to crypto. And if those on-ramps want to succeed, they will build educational components around them or as part of their use. So we don't need to rebuild those things. And we also don't necessarily need to fill in the gaps where, you know, maybe those, you know, there are components of, you know, information or education that are missing. I think what we realized is, especially with the people who have sort of stuck around since we transitioned, since we began our transition, and I'd be interested to hear what ZFi and True have to say. But for me, it has been sort of the realization that we are as much a community as anything else. And we don't necessarily need to define ourselves around a product in order to exist. It's easier for sure to do that. Like if you have a bankless podcast and a bank token, something that exists already that has some tangible traction in the space, that's a lot easier for sure, but it's not necessary. So what ZFi was saying before is I think we're a little bit less concretely defined by intention, and it opens things up a little bit more. And as we're speaking, the term sandbox actually is a good one. Not that we're gonna try and take that from you, but it's funny that we're, you know, that, you know, Lanzer is sort of, we're on Lanzer's podcast from sandbox down. We're basically talking about, you know, creating more or less a sandbox for a community to vibe and thrive.
Yeah, that's that did not escape me. But I think it sounds like you're very much in the business of staying nimble, almost. It's staying open and flexible to where maybe a mission will develop in the future, maybe not, but the whole vibing, thriving, and exploring, I can see that start to take hold in what you've been articulating. For your role specifically, what does the Transition Council do? What would you say you do here?
I love this question. All right. So the community tasked us or wanted to see a group of people take the reins on this like reorganization direction. And we struggled to do it all individually. And even once the TC, once the Transition Council was formed, part of what we started with was getting like feedback from the community, putting surveys on the forum to determine what are our collective values? Where are our overlaps? You know, what purposes would you like to see this organization achieve or work toward? And the biggest thing that I noticed up front, one, that it was going to be a hard lift, but two, is that everybody just wanted to be together. We all knew that we wanted to be together doing a thing. And we're all looking at each other like, all right, what thing are we supposed to do? So the people in the community almost came first. Like Rowan was saying, those who have stuck around this long from Bankless DAO, even as the DAO has kind of declined over the years, the people who are still left are very passionate. And we've gotten to know each other and we like working with each other. And that's why we want to reboot with this great foundation of people and skills that we have and form a new organization in a new direction.
Yeah, there was definitely a bit of an identity crisis that took place. Again, because if you don't have a product or an idea to which you can adhere as a community and build around, then it's much harder to define what you're doing. And I think we really struggled with that. So the creation of the Transition Council was to consolidate effort and authority to some extent to start moving these things through. Because, you know, and maybe we'll touch on it a little bit later in the episode, but I had a quick look at the governance structure of Sandbox DAO. And mm-hmm. I mean, every DAO, every community has their governance structure. But when you have this identity crisis, like we did as a community, I think we lost DeFi.
Oh, he's back.
Welcome back. But yeah, as I guess, you know, when we had this identity crisis and we were struggling to figure out, first of all, what to do and then how to do it. We recognized that there were limitations to our governance structure and, you know, the procedures and operations that we had in place. So we had to change them, but the existing governance structure was, you know, kind of arduous. You know, like there was a lot of discussion, and I think in a good way, you know, like it's decentralized. So we want to get people's input before, you know, we charge ahead and, you know, implement things and, you know, pray that we don't break things. But that meant that there was a lot of inertia in the community. So someone had to take this problem of, one, what are we doing now? Who are we collectively? And then how do we move forward? How do we do this thing that I don't even know what we're doing with the existing governance processes that need to change? It was just this bag of a bunch of baggage, you know, from the community. And you couldn't address one thing without addressing a whole bunch of other things. So I think we realized that, you know, we need some kind of consolidated effort and authority to move things forward. And that's why the Transition Council was created. So we're focusing on, as DeFi mentioned initially, redefining our mission, vision, and values, getting input from the community. We have got input from the community in terms of what do we want to do? Who are we? Where do we want to go? And now we're working on a rebrand. So how do we want to sort of convey ourselves to the rest of the space and the world? And then we'll work on, you know, what comes next. So how do we want to structure our membership to this community? How do we want to, what changes and how do we want to implement governance structure, learning from our past? And I'm careful not to say mistakes, because I don't think they are mistakes necessarily, but we do have to take into account where we were and how we got here.
Learning opportunities.
Always.
True Cat, I'm curious, what about you?
ZFI or True, do you guys have anything to add to those thoughts?
I just wanted to add that, yeah, I mean, you you're right to say there was a period of inertia, and you skipped over it, Lanza, when you said like that happened in November with the Arbitrum proposal, and then 6 months later the Transition Council was formed. But during that 6 months, there was, yeah, definitely a period of identity crisis, I guess you could call it. I was a big part of Bankless Publishing, which we almost immediately stopped using the name Bankless and that publishing, and therefore kind of shut down that whole stream of activity. And, you know, it was a period where we just really needed to figure out what we wanted, and the fact that we came, you know, we stayed together during community calls during that entire time, and people were just able to kind of share what it was that they valued. It was a good period, and I'm glad I was part of it. But we did need at some point to take the reins and actually move things forward, because we could still be just talking about what we might become if we hadn't, as a community, decided that we would just consolidate down into a group of people who were willing to commit to the time it took. So we had to, as Zephi mentioned, you know, do some cleanup of things that no longer were, you know, up to date, and then also kind of try to move us forward and make decisions about the future. And we just recently, even, you know, after several months of activity in the Transition Council, we held a snapshot vote to actually ratify that decision-making authority, because we, you know, ran into some issues around, do we actually have the right to make decisions for this community going forward? And it turns out we do.
I saw that. That's what I was trying to join the DAO. Like, I need to join the DAO so I can vote. And I missed it. And then it was all over after that.
Right. The other thing I was occurring to me this morning, though, is people always talk about...
I was going to vote for it, by the way.
good. people talk about, you know, will the governance or will the system scale up? But I think we also need to be conscious of, will it scale back down? And so we found, you know, one of the things with having a small group of people left was how we could actually bring, you know, the decision-making authority back to them, or at least and even just enable them to have the authority, because maybe it was, you know, always set to be a bigger group that was making the decisions. And so, yeah, governance has to scale both ways.
Yeah, that's the flexibility y'all were speaking to earlier. And so, was it just the name that you had to... I know there's a spider web of activities that have to happen, but was it just the name, and that was the impetus behind most of this?
I think that was our biggest catalyst. Yeah, we needed to determine if we wanted to continue using the Bankless branding. We decided, ultimately did not. And then making that break and the rebranding with all the socials and the accounts. Mostly just administrative.
So it wasn't taken from you? You decided to just continue using it?
I don't know if that's as clear. And I think maybe that depends on who you ask. But yeah, it did come down to the brand. And fundamentally, you have an LLC, like a company that exists in a jurisdiction, you know, subject to laws and, you know, whatever, everything that comes with that. And then you have a DAO, which is global and permissionless, largely permissionless. And there was, you know, by and large, permissionless use of the brand. And I think Bankless LLC realized that and said, this could be like a big problem for us, specifically for our brand, which they had taken the time to build. And so I totally respect that. There were sort of, you know, there's so much history there that I'm trying to be as objective as possible.
Sure.
Right. But, you know, it would be framed as the Bankless DAO was created as an experiment, as a, you know, a headless brand, as True mentioned previously. But I don't think that anyone really had the foresight, especially because DAOs were just, you know, coming on the scene and becoming very, very big. Like, it was DAO, I don't know what season, DAO summer, you know, people were vibing in DAOs. Very, very exciting. Lots of energy, lots of people getting involved. People weren't thinking necessarily about the future when, there are people all over the world using this brand in ways that maybe the Bankless LLC folks weren't aligned with, or maybe that could even get them in trouble. So, you know, they have jobs, their livelihood is attached to this thing that they've built, this brand that they've built. And all of a sudden people are using it in ways that, you know, it's not about control necessarily, but it's about making sure that it doesn't come back to them in any kind of negative way. So I get that. And then there was discussion about how do we move forward? How do we sort of, I don't know if the words disambiguate, but you know, how do we consolidate what is Bankless LLC versus what is Bankless DAO? And by that point, Bankless DAO had grown so far, so fast that, I mean, I'm curious, ZeeFi and Drew, what you guys think. But when I looked at the problem of administering use of a brand that had already been used permissionlessly for years, it didn't seem like that was something that you could roll back, and it wasn't, at least not very easily.
Yeah, I think we did, excuse me, they did give us an option to work forward with some permissioned use of the brand name, where we would be given permission by LLC if we wanted to use it. And that was just something that the community, I guess, ultimately didn't want to do. It was a very unfortunate back and forth, but like Rowan said, I see why Bankless LLC had to do what they did. And I understand, I mean, from a legal perspective, that they had to reduce their liability. So we just worked with what we had. And unfortunately, that meant we had to basically spin off.
What was the thing that you're able to say that was done?
The thing that was like the catalyst for sure. HQ.
Like the Arbitrum proposal, but I mean, the action that was taken that then became the catalyst. If it wasn't like you didn't get a letter saying thou shalt not use this anymore, what was it that led to your voluntary, involuntary decision to stop, to transition?
I don't know that I can point to a specific example. There was some communication back and forth between HQ and the DAO, but it was kind of like it was through a couple of individuals who were transmitting the information.
Okay, so this was a dialogue. Really, they were saying, hey, this is an issue for us. Can you please help us find a solution? And through a series of conversations, hard and otherwise, the DAO, BDAO, came to the conclusion that we want to change to BFDAO. And then the transition council came after that.
Yeah. I'll say it.
I think that's, yeah.
I'll say it. There was a storm on Twitter. They're both laughing at me.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a storm on Twitter.
I watched the podcast episode and I read through all those tweets and oh my gosh.
Yes, it was, and it was absolutely horrible for David and Ryan to have to deal with that on their Thanksgiving. You know, I fully appreciate that they were absolutely blindsided by it. But their response was to very much push the DAO to arm's length and try to disassociate from it as much as they could. In that moment, that was their response. And so it became very clear to the community that that was actually how they felt about the DAO. Okay, that's how I feel about it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, 100% back to that. I'd say that's accurate.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, you know, we didn't feel we could go forward knowing that.
I understand.
Again, I'm speaking for myself, not for the DAO, but that's how I see it. Again, that doesn't mean I don't understand their response. They were absolutely blindsided. But I think, you know, it became evident that actually there was not going to be that support going forward.
The reflex response was, oh no, this isn't our problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's now we have to address it from that angle. Yeah.
I see. So a vacuum was created.
Kind of.
Distance.
Kind of.
A distance with no direction.
So they weren't necessarily fulfilling leadership. That's right. He did say that they weren't necessarily fulfilling a lot of leadership roles, and that's why they didn't really know about it.
Never were, and I don't think ever intended to. They weren't really a leadership position in the DAO.
They intentionally, I mean, they held, as part of the Genesis team of the DAO, they held a very large number of tokens.
As a result,
they excluded themselves from, you know, any decision making and governance actions within the DAO. It was
reasonable.
Know,
yeah,
I think 100%, and that's why. So I mean, there is sort of like intent and outcome or impact, right? And I think the intent was honest and, you know, innocent. And a DAO was created with the intent to include as many people as possible, because this was, you know, one of the fastest ways to scale communities and ideas. But again, back to that foresight of how do we, you know, does permissionlessness actually work in this environment? And if it doesn't, how do we sort of retain control on the aspects of brand and identity that we need to, so that, you know, our, I'm speaking on sort of, I'm trying to imagine what it was like for David and Ryan, especially during that Twitter storm where they were like, oh, wow. All of a sudden this is way, way bigger and maybe a lot worse in some aspects than we realized. And for sure, I get it. You want to disassociate from the DAO. And a lot of what they said was true for sure. But I think what maybe they forgot and, you know, perhaps to this day haven't really acknowledged is the social contracts that exist or that existed when they created the DAO. It was always, I think from their perspective, considered an experiment, but there were real people around the world building on the Bankless brand. So there was a tremendous benefit to the Bankless brand from the, like, by virtue of the existence of the DAO. The Twitter storm, I think, highlighted the flip side of that, right? So, like, you have tremendous benefit, but you also have the potential to be, you know, for severe, like, serious damage to your brand if it's not used properly.
Got it.
So when they disassociated themselves, there were people in the community who were, you know, our feelings were hurt, for one, definitely, because this is something we'd invested in for a very long time. But people were also financially hurt because, right? Because this had an impact on the Bankless token, or the bank token, I should say. And, you know, we can, there's, that is a rabbit hole unto itself, but
sure.
I think, you know, there's a lot of nuance to this, and again, trying to be as objective as possible,
yep,
recognizing that there are sort of two sides, two interested sides in this problem.
So Bankless, the public backlash to Arbitrum DAO proposal led to Bankless HQ distancing itself from the Bankless DAO, which led to community dialogue about how to proceed. And that's kind of where the theory of permissionless experiment met the reality of permissionless experiment. And out of that came the decision to transition. Am I close?
Yeah. I would say that's a good summary. And, you know, transition, I would say at that point really just meant move away from the use of or association with the Bankless brand. But the transition itself, you know, it's ongoing, right? Like, the transition council was created 6 months after that event, and it's ongoing now. So yeah, it was like we're talking about Catalyst and sort of the events that followed.
That is a tough problem. Like, you are facing the sort of tough problems that, in, let's call it the real world, right? IRL, that major conglomerates and corporations have to face with mergers and all sorts of breaking apart. And I mean, you're talking about how do you unwind a corporation's portfolio, and just really, really tough legal problems that qualified experts spend full time doing. And here you have dedicated, passionate community members who are trying to figure it out just like the rest of us. That's tough. Oh my gosh, that's tough.
It's even more complicated than thinking about, like, dismantling a business, for example, because it's also a social group. It's a society, a little, you know, it's a mini society in a way too. So it's, you're managing the organizational structure as well as the social structure. It's a lot to juggle.
Like, how to disassociate a nation from its, yeah, Wow. So the governance structure for BDAO versus BFDAO, what I heard the term guilds, BDAO was described as a conglomerate of DAOs. Wasn't quite sure how to what to make of that.
Well, the old structure was mostly guilds, departments, and projects. But we pretty much have no structure at this point. Everything consolidated just into basically DAO general as we were working through this transition. So the Black Flag DAO structure will be different. Membership structure will be different. But that's what we're working on now.
Okay. Yeah, guilds, departments, and projects now is a BF DAO general.
Yep. And those were consolidated because they were, you know, they were largely DAO units that were created to fulfill the purpose, you know, the mission and vision of the DAO. And with that changing, they, you know, their continued existence didn't make sense. So just, you know, very quickly, you talked about like, I can't remember how you said it, but sort of like a loosely connected network of DAOs. That's, I think,
a conglomerate of DAOs. I think I took that quote from either David or Ryan. I think one of them said that.
Yeah. And I think that to some extent makes sense, but it really depends on how you define DAO. I mean, like the flagship was Bankless DAO. And then, you know, if the Discord server got, you know, too full, then, or it was hard. I mean, you should have seen the Discord server at the time. It was huge. Like, I've never seen a Discord server like that. And yeah. And so if a project or a DAO unit got big enough, they would just split off and create their own Discord server because it was easier to navigate. So I think people started to think, oh, well, maybe that's another DAO. Like, maybe that's a sub DAO. You know, but this is all terminology. Like, and I don't know that it is important in the discussion. It's just kind of the way people were sense making the structure of this thing, this behemoth of a DAO that existed.
Yeah, I listened to the 52 pickup episode with you, ZFi, Rowan, and Drost, and I think. At the time, I couldn't figure out who was who, by the way, because all I could hear were your voices. So what I was like, question mark said this, question mark said that. But at 42 minutes in, one of you noted creating a working group. There we go. At 52 minutes in, one of you noted that when you created working groups, those working groups created their own Discords, and that ended up being a double-edged sword. And what I think I inferred from that was that they created their own little subculture, or and they somehow were separated from the main unit, just like happens in real life. And then they create their own identity, which may have been conflicting with what you were going after.
I think double-edged sword is probably a great way to put it. All right. Yes, it allowed us to keep the organization and the navigation a little bit more manageable, but it also resulted in projects and departments sometimes just becoming their own little things and all these different groups running as disconnected silos. We expanded very quickly.
Yeah. Coordination failure, right? Like it was a way for, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Moloch. Moloch?
I've heard of it. Yeah. Yeah. I just took my DAO certification course with Blockchain Council, and thank you very much. And Moloch was one of the things they kept mentioning. It was kind of interesting.
So people characterize Moloch as the god of coordination failure. So as we created, you know, more Discords and sort of we fractured the DAO out of necessity, out of an attempt to like sense make and be able to navigate the DAO. As ZFi said, the result was siloing and a breakdown of communication and ultimately coordination failures that were navigable, but it's, you know, I think that's what was being referred to.
And was the, you can just say no to this question. Did that lead to the proposal and Arbitrum going awry in a way?
No.
Drew says no. All right, cool. Cool. I'm off base.
If anything, that proposal was an illustration of the fact that all of those units were still very capable of working together.
Okay, cool.
In fact, we had a campaign just prior to that for Optimism, which was the predecessor almost to the Arbitrum proposal, was various, you know, media producers during the within the DAO working together to produce content, and that was a successful campaign and carried out, you know, across all of the international media nodes, and also, you know, producing content in, you know, a number of different languages, including English. So if anything, it was an illustration that we were still very able to work together and communicate together. What happened with the Arbitrum proposal was that people on Twitter got hold of it. It was for quite a lot of ARB, and decided that they would take their trolling out on that particular aspect of it and blame David and Ryan, which David and Ryan had nothing to do with it. Yeah, it wasn't that we weren't able to work successfully together. It was just that it became very sprawling and big, and I guess in a way, because we were still, all of those groups were still voting on DAO things. You know, if you have structures in place or you don't, there are still factions that form, and I guess some of those groups perhaps became factions, and it became a little bit more difficult to look at proposals.
Got it.
As a group of individuals, it became maybe a group of groups.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, and I read through the tweets and like, oh my gosh, this is what the Twitter mob looks like. And y'all are getting the full end of it. Like, holy smokes. It's reasonable to me. Everything seemed fine.
Yeah. It was an uninformed mob, like Drew said. It was people taking issue for the sake of taking issue with something, you know, like it was, you know, they looked at a situation and they said, this could be construed in this very negative way. I'm going to run with
this. Let's do it. Yeah.
Let's do it. You know, like, I don't really care what the reality is. I'm just going to crap all over these guys because I can.
It's the internet.
Yeah.
So 10 minutes earlier in the episode, again, question mark said that creating a working group was one of the most effective things in a DAO. I think, ZFi, it might have been your voice. So was it the most effective thing because, as True was just saying, or ZFi, you were just saying that it kept things manageable, and how True, you were saying that that proposal was a demonstration that you could still work together, so it still worked in the end. Am I close?
Yeah, I mean, working groups just allowed people, you know, with similar interests and ideas to come together and actually make something happen in a smaller group than, you know, because of that permissionless nature. If they needed funding, obviously that went to the main DAO, but people could really just create things and work on things without needing that kind of permission. So that's how we managed to spin up newsletters and podcasts and things across the whole DAO. It was really just based on that working group structure of like-minded people going, yeah, let's do that, you know.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
That may have been a Drost comment. That sounds like it might have been a Drost comment.
Oh, was it? Groups. Okay. Sorry. I'm so sorry, Drost. I was trying very hard to keep track of who is who.
Yeah. That's,
there's only so much you can do with audio.
Yeah. It's good. It's good to know that. I mean, yeah. I think probably also what, you know, it's what True was saying in that if you have a large group of people in a DAO, not everybody is going to be interested in doing the same thing all the time. So if I'm interested in writing, I'm going to get together with other people who are interested in writing. I'm going to secure the necessary permissions and funding to produce something. And we're going to go and work on it over there. And, you know, the rest of the DAO has given the green light for this group to work on this thing. So they don't need to be involved anymore because the working group has been created. Rather than having the entire community weigh in on every aspect of it, which really, really slows things down. So working groups are, I would say, one thing that we've learned as a fundamental component of getting things done in a DAO. They can be super useful, very nimble, very action oriented. Drew, would you say that I've captured kind of what you were saying more or less accurately?
Very much. As usual, far more articulate.
Well, I don't know about that.
It's that fireplace in the background. It makes you very pensive.
Yeah.
All right, let's go with some as rapid fire as you all like, or not. Your vision in the next 6 to 12 months for Black Flag DAO. Where do you see it going?
Wow, hard to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, baby steps, but very intentional towards a minimum viable product for membership and governance and maybe a token. But these fundamental sort of structures that a community can utilize to start building. We have a lot of very passionate people, talented people in the community still. And we just need to create this structure so that we can coordinate effectively and start working together to create whatever it is we're going to create. And maybe that will be, as you said, maybe, you know, it'll be something more specific as, you know, we develop some experience. And maybe it won't be. Maybe it'll be very much like a sandbox, and you know, it'll be sort of a fertile ground for whatever people want to work on and create together. I don't know, but I think in the short to medium term, that would be my goal. My ideal outcome is like a really, really good minimum viable product, balancing that minimalist and viability to, you know, provide the community with something that's functional, a governance and organizational membership structure to run with.
So ultimately, whatever the Transition Council delivers for our reboot, it won't be the last iteration. It won't be the last thing that we do. We want to be able to deliver something that is workable. That's a good, solid foundation. And then why I say it would be difficult for me to guess what it's going to look like 6 to 12 months out. It's because ultimately the community will take the reins at that point, and they'll be able to determine where we want to go, which tools do we want to use? We want to experiment with that platform or this platform. So it's hard to say like specifics for me, what we'll look like, but I'd love to see more projects popping up. I'd love to see that activity coming back. Those like organic groups being formed to do a thing that aligns with the mission. We used to have it. And I think a lot of DAOs do have it. And it's just like, aligning the passion with the objective. We've got the people, just a matter of time.
True.
Totally agree. I think the most, the thing that sustained us over the last 12 months and the thing that will sustain us going forward is those conversations that we have, those, you know, and it's not, that doesn't always mean that they're verbal calls, conversations, because obviously we're in every time zone, but certainly just the conversations that we have as a group, whether we're trying to work out, you know, the best way forward in governance, or we're jamming about the latest app or whatever, or just laughing together and listening to some good music at the end of the community call, those are the things that matter. And that's why, you know, we've left it fairly broad, and that's what I hope it is still really strong in 6 months' time. And that's the thing that it will be the basis, as Zephi said, for those organic kind of growths to come out and, you know, take us in new directions.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. If you could look back, or as you look back, what would you say in BDAO, things that worked well versus, well, I guess BFDAO is not fully online yet. So what's something that worked out well with BDAO?
gosh, we had a lot of wins. We learned a lot of stuff, but even if we learned things that we would maybe say in hindsight were hard or bad, just the experience of going through all those learning experiences, we have so much information now to build a new organization and a new social structure. The experience, I think, is probably my biggest takeaway.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there was no one thing, I think. It was just what we did well and what we'll continue to do well is community.
Well put.
Rowan.
Yeah, I mean, people have joined this community and said, you know, this is kind of like the DAO-iest of DAOs, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I would like to see that. I would like to see us carry that forward. You know, I think that was probably the biggest win is community. And that's why we're focusing on it so much. Because in the absence of a product or a purpose, we still had community. We still had these connections. And we're still a group of people who are engaged and, you know, want to work together to create something. You know, and we're not, I think, in the context, right? In the context of crypto and, you know, we're not talking about creating like a factory for teddy bears or something. I mean, maybe we will do that, but
your secret heart.
Yeah. I want to bring the Care Bears back. I mean, no, I'm just kidding.
But it's worth saying too, right? We have, we often talk, and we're actually in the Transition Council thinking about, you know, how can we also recognize alumni from the Bankless DAO community. And so we still have a network of people across Web3 who have gone on to do great things elsewhere in other communities and organizations across Web3 who very much consider themselves alumni of BDAO. And, you know, that has been our strength. We may not have known it at the time, but we are a strong network of people who know what BDAO was like.
That's really cool.
You can't kill that.
And now that you're in BFDAO, I know it's still very new and emerging. What are things that you see now that's working out well? Is it a fair question for me to ask?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the Transition Council is the first example of things that are working out well. You know, it is one of those working groups that we were talking about, a small group of people focused on a problem or a set of problems with the initiative to find those solutions.
Okay.
Yeah,
definitely. I think that's fine.
Yeah. The fact that the community then, you know, gave us a strong resounding yes, please go ahead and do this. That's the ultimate trust, right? Is to put their faith in the six of us to carry this forward and to make changes to the Bankless DAO existing constitution without necessarily having to vote on every single aspect. And we've put our reputations on the line for that. And we're very, very conscious of the fact that we carry the expectations of the community through that process.
Mm-hmm. But with the PM tool like you have on Notion, I don't see any. I think you're going to come out on top just fine.
Yeah, we are trying to be as transparent as possible.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, mission accomplished, even from a far outsider who didn't even know what Bankless was until recently.
Awesome.
Good thanks. To hear.
That's meaningful. And I just want to add, like, really, really driving that aspect of community to, you know, I think even in the context of this recent vote, we're always trying to make sure that we have the necessary consensus or consent from the community to do whatever we need to do. So it's that inclusivity. You know, we're not going to be able to satisfy everybody. And I say we more broadly than the Transition Council. We're a group of people who are trying to build something. And yeah, the Transition Council is a subset of those, of that community. And the same issue exists. You know, we're trying to ensure that we meet the expectations of everybody, but we also want to, you know, to the greatest extent possible, make sure that we're hearing from everybody, making sure that, you know, we're not doing something that, I mean, it's one thing if somebody doesn't like it, but if it's, you know, fundamentally against a value system, then, you know, we want to hear from people because people make up the community.
Spoken like a good Transition Council member.
We are we're being very careful.
Yeah. No, that's clear. You're approaching it with caution, wisdom, the sort of wisdom you learn the hard way sometimes, and sometimes the lesson is what not to do next time. Sometimes it'd be like that. What would you?
I'm also expressing my personal values. So I'm not speaking so much as a politician or a representative of the Transition Council, but I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm here because of people. I'm not here because of a technology or an app or, you know, to fill my bags. I'm here because the Bankless mission resonated with me initially, and I want to carry that forward somehow. I would like to make the world better for individuals. I want to, you know, I want to decentralize power and authority, and I want to empower individuals. So how do you do that? Well, you don't do that by focusing on an organization over individuals. You do that by focusing on individuals, focusing on community.
What is something that you all would have done different? If you could, I'm asking you to Monday morning quarterback yourselves.
I mean, hindsight is 20/20, right? Like there are so many things that we could have done differently that would have resulted in perhaps more favorable outcomes. You know, I think, I mean, I'm tempted to say something like, you know, be more realistic about, you know, things like emergence. You know, things are just going to work out. You know, if we need something, then you know, a group of people will just sort of manifest and take care of it. Or you know, permissionlessness works, kind of full stop, because I think we've realized that it doesn't. Maybe yet, but I think there are ideas or philosophies that the community espoused in the last iteration of the DAO that were very idealistic and served us in a lot of ways, for sure. I mean, you have to hope, right? We have to hope that things like this will actually work out. But I think, you know, we've learned maybe that we do need some permissions.
Got it.
You know, but that just comes with, you know, maturity and wisdom and experience.
ZFi?
I think to touch on that and maybe expand on it a little bit is just, we also, how do I put words to this? We tended to focus or favor optimistic voting. So anytime a proposal would go up, we were excited to try it. We thought, hey, we're going to support our friends. We'll try this new thing. Maybe it's a project. We'll fund this project. Maybe it's a new approach. We're going to just say yes and try it, which works. I mean, in a lot of ways, that's good. It allows you to iterate and try new things very quickly. But the optimistic approach, especially when it came to funding, is something that probably isn't the best approach. You know, we didn't really look at sustainability, organizational financial sustainability when we were making these decisions. We just thought, does it sound like a good idea? Sure, send it. But a bunch of those collectively made all together without oversight of like where we're all going together financially. Kind of
current job, I had to learn the skill set of sustainability, and I didn't really understand it to the degree that I did until I had to do that as my job. I was all about like acquiring things, flashy things, get the coolest stuff. But then there's the hard work of maintaining it, sustaining it, enhancing it, keeping it there, all that grueling work and sometimes thankless work. So you would have done that differently to look at it a little bit more in the sustainable lens.
Either encourage voters to, or educate voters with more information to be able to make those weighted decisions. Like, yes, it's a good idea, but that cost might not check. Or to approach things maybe not from the optimistic by default.
Got it. Maybe we approach things
from the, this doesn't pass unless everybody supports it kind of a thing.
Got it. True, what do you think?
I think that's really spot on. I think, you know, it's easy, as Rowan said, in hindsight is 2020. But we definitely do continually need to keep looking at the implications of the decisions we make. As reflecting this morning that what I like to call the speed of Dow is something that is, it takes time to get input from everybody who should give input, and then to reflect on that and to hear people's concerns and to really think about the implications and weigh up the risk, you know, associated with all of those things, and the need to then balance that with being able to be nimble in a situation where something may go wrong and you need to be able to respond quickly, it's a hard thing to be able to grab. And I don't think we necessarily did it wrong, but hand in hand with sustainability goes resilience for me. And so I think we weren't necessarily thinking, I think we talked about sustainability a lot the whole time I was in the Dow, and as the bank runway started to shorten, it became more of an issue. But I don't really think that we spent enough time looking at resilience, and maybe that's why when that big situation happened, you know, we didn't have the systems in place to be able to just survive and go forward. It really did require a dismantling. And as Rowan said before, it probably was always coming.
And do you think, True, that if you had been a little bit more resilient, that you wouldn't have had to dismantle as much?
Well, I think we might have had, it's hard to say, but I think we might have had, you know, we may have had agreements in place, and we may have had, you know, better understanding of what the relationship was with Bankless LLC and things like that, that probably, you know, might have allowed us to kind of scaffold a way through. But as it was, we were kind of operating on hope a lot of the time.
Got it.
Hope and a belief and a social contract.
It,
you know, those things are wonderful, but then possibly not the best thing with tools for resilience.
And one of my old supervisors used to say, hope is not a strategy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Got it.
I do have to go, but it's been an
understood.
Great
thank
pleasure.
You, True. Thank you so much for your time.
Really fun. See you guys.
You're awesome. Thanks, True. See you later.
I just listened to that Making Bank episode this morning, and I just want to say I'm so proud to work with both of you. I thought I listened to it on 1.75 speed because I know that all three of you are not afraid of a thoughtful pause, but I really enjoyed listening to it, and I was really proud to be on the team with you.
It's very
and with that,
pleasure
thanks right for having me.
True, thank you
thanks,
so much.
True.
Have a great day.
See you later. Yeah.
I have to run as well. I will not leave with such eloquence, but I just want to say thank you very much, Lenzer, for having us. I guess before I do leave, do you want, is there anything else you wanted to ask?
I think we got through, all my windows are jacked up right now, but
we're gonna keep going.
We're good. I think the main thing I wanted to know was, so I figured out, I think I know what the answer is to the best practices, and on my third discussion question was, one of you said, question mark said, what was lacking was distinction between the financial relationship and the brand relationship. Bankless Media LLC believed the brand was being used improperly and saw Bankless DAO as an experiment. And I noted that a similar overlap right now exists with the Sandbox DAO and the Sandbox game. And I wanted to ask, what sort of landmines should we avoid?
Well, I think really very, very, very clearly establish expectations, right? I mean, I think going into the creation of Bankless DAO, Bankless LLC saw it as an experiment, but the people who are contributors to Bankless DAO didn't have the same idea. You know, it was, I think, something that Bankless LLC could detach themselves from fairly readily, given the DAO didn't have any kind of legal framework. But I think going into any relationship between a DAO and a legal entity is really, really important. And you know, what, maybe if Bankless DAO had some kind of legal footprint in the US, it might have been different. It could have been messy, right?
Courses might have existed, whereas not okay. All right, I'm picking up what you're putting down now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that to me is an aspect of clarifying expectations. I'm not recommending that Sandbox DAO seeks some kind of legal footprint in the US, because there are advantages and tremendous disadvantages to that, right? And it puts contributors at a lot of risk. So, you know, I would just say clarify those expectations, both in terms of the way that the DAO is interacting with, you know, the LLC, and what that means and what it means in the future, like what plans exist for the DAO in the future, and how the LLC, you know, how the LLC sees the purpose of the DAO sort of evolving over time. And to me, you know, that as I mentioned when we were jamming before the start of the episode, there seems to be like a three phase roadmap for, you know, decentralizing the governance of and the ownership perhaps of the game to the DAO. And yeah, I mean, it's something that to me would be very complicated and perhaps very messy over time. But it's just maintaining that communication and ensuring those expectations are very clearly communicated.
I
think about it and I'm like,
no, I get what you mean.
Communication, right? Like communication, acting with honesty and integrity, and communicating your beliefs and your intentions.
Thanks, Rowan. And,
yeah. So
it was a pleasure speaking with you.
I will leave you with that. Thanks for the opportunity to chat, Lanzer. It was a great time.
Yeah. As he rides off into the sunset.
Sunset here in my G-Meet background.
Ciao. ZFi, I had a couple more, but at this point, if you have to go as well, I think we got to a good place.
Good. I think it's probably a good idea. I've got a cat I've been fighting here for the last 20 minutes.
The war
she's
with the cat.
Great, but boy, is she hungry. So I'm 30 minutes past dinner time and she's letting me know.
It makes sense. Every time I saw you go, whoop, whoop.
She is relentless.
Yes. Hey, you all were super flexible and very easy to work with, but schedule around and get this cool. Set up. This was fabulous. And I learned a lot talking with you all and just watching, looking at that Notion site, the way it was planned out and it is planned out, watching the two episodes and juxtaposing them together like that. And then hearing the wisdom of things that you did well, things that you wish you had paid a little bit more attention to, and then some landmines that our own DAO could potentially look at to make sure that it's not as an intense problem for us if that ever happens. That was really valuable. Thank you so much for sharing your pains and troubles and the whole.
We've had a lot of them. Might as well share the wealth, right?
Yeah. Well, is there anything that you want to ask me or anything that you wanted to end with and tell everyone?
I have nothing on my mind, but thank you so much for giving us this opportunity to tell our story. And maybe we can come back with a part two after we get a good launch on the Black Flag DAO.
I'd love to. I'd love to check back in and see how everything happens on the flip side.
Sounds good. We'll stay in touch.
Alrighty. All right, everyone. This was Sandel Podcast number 44. Can't believe we're at 44 already. But we spoke today with TrueCat, ZFi, and Rowan from Bankless DAO, now called Black Flag DAO, as they transition out of a really, really tough thing on both sides. How do you separate what was your identity, your name, to what your new identity is going to be? What does it look like? Everything from governance to your name to the community image change and the tough problems that they are, the tough solutions that they're coming up with in order to come out better on the other side to, would you say, vibe, thrive, and explore.
You got it.
Thank you, ZFi. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lancer.
All right. Bye, everybody.